Hello and welcome to the Raising Men Show. I know I say this all the time, but Tuesdays, man, Super Tuesdays are in the place. I love Tuesdays. But I think more so than just being the day, Tuesday, the second day of the week. Well, technically it's the third day of the week if you really look at Sunday being the first day. And it's supposed to be our Sabbath. It's supposed to be, you know, resting and giving our best to the Lord, giving our best to ourselves and getting, you know, prepped. A lot of us aren't able to do that. We're not able to currently take a Sabbath day off. We're just trying to work and do other things and providing for our families in a long season. But we do need to find some rest for ourselves and we need to find where we're supposed to be. I think that's an interesting place that the Lord's got us starting today. This is week 8 of the study. And I find myself in a spot where I'm like, okay, Lord, what did you want me to say? What do you want me to be? Where do you want us to go? I've never done a study before, and this is turning out to be what looks to be a 12-week study, and we're obviously more than halfway. We're coming into the home stretch, and the Lord's really kind of been dealing with me on some issues. So the thing that really stuck out is, even for what to talk about for this week, what do you put into the 8th week? And I got a text message from a friend of mine, and it was real clear as to what we needed to talk about. And so today's topic is keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. And that is coming from the premise that a lot of time we get tired, especially those of us who've, you know, heard from the Lord and we know what the Lord's voice is, or even if we don't and we've kind of got excited about the awe and mysticism of God and we may have gotten our first, prophetic word or rhema word or first word from the Lord that we knew beyond the shadow of knowing that was God, you know, and so we got excited and we got all juiced up and got into the emotion and the passion of what that word was and about it being for us. And the Lord might have told us something really profound that we needed to go do with it. It might have been a big charge. It might have been to start a ministry or to go serve a ministry or go do something great. I don't know, climb Mount Everest in the snow with just some gym shorts on during the dead of winter. I don't know. It could have been something that was so great to us that we were just in awe of God and the experience that the Lord would really take the time and the moment to speak to us and to get us going. And so far too often when that happens to us, I know for me, when it happens to me, when I got, you know, my first initial words from the Lord to do certain things, or and even till now, when I hear the Lord, you know, kind of prompting to do a certain thing or not, I have to go seek Him and ask Him about 4 or 5 times. Lord, are you sure this is what I'm supposed to be doing? Because the key that trips us up so often, it's not the what that trips us up, and the what are we supposed to be doing? And that's for some of you, like, what do you mean? It's not the what. The what is the big thing. Well, no, the big thing is not the what. It's the when. Because that's when the trip up comes, when the Lord tells you to start a ministry, or the Lord tells you to do something for Him, when the Lord tells you to do something that's so outside of your comfort zone that it's not the enormity of the request, it's more of the timing of the request. And when we don't ask the Lord when, and we just get out to start doing, and we get caught up in the prompting or the passion or the excitement about wanting to go do that. And sometimes we strike out on our own and we find ourselves out there laboring in a vineyard that we didn't plant, or laboring in a space where it's our labor and not the Lord's labor, because the Lord's like, yeah, in some cases the Lord can be, you know, hey, I told you to do this. Yes, you're doing what I told you to do. You're doing it how you wanted to do that, and you're not doing it when I told you to do it. In some cases, it's that way where we kind of strike out on our own and, you know, kind of get caught in this, did the Lord really tell me when to start? He did. We just heard the Lord so often to start. And so when we find ourselves out having heard the Lord at one point, and we may be in a ministry, I don't know, it could be 2 days, it could be 2 years, it could be 20 years. We find ourselves, we find ourselves so often getting tired and getting lost and getting frustrated. I know the Bible speaks about don't grow weary in well-doing, but that's where we often find ourselves when we don't hear that reassurance from the Lord, when we don't hear that attaboy, keep going, when you don't hear that, you know, turn right, turn left. It's it's you may get those gentle nubs, or sometimes you might get the serious, you know, bump, you know, as if you're riding bumper cars to change directions. But the trouble comes when we don't hear it. And in those silent moments when the Lord's voice is hard to come by and hard to distinguish between that and a whisper. And that's where I was when I found myself with this show, you know, a year or two ago. I knew the Lord had called me to do the Raising Men show. I know he called me to minister to and share my heart for and to men who found themselves in situations like myself where they're having to raise their children on their own. But when you get into those moments when you're tired and the money gets short and you're unsure of where you're going to be and you have some troubles in the, well, I mean, let's put it down like the disciples were not on the boat. I mean, those were our stormy seas, right? When we're on the boat of our life, when the money gets funny and people do too, and we're not really sure how we're going to make one end meet the other. We don't quite know how we're going to get clothes or food for the kids and be able to support our ministry at the same time. Not sure how we're going to pay the bill on that rental room that we're renting for our ministry, or not sure how we're going to get food for the homeless shelter, for the food bank, because we need food for our own bank. You know, we need money for our bank. And so we need to be assured that if the Lord told us to do what we are doing, the Lord's sure enough going to tell us when to stop. And so that's where we really, really need to rely on faith. Excuse me. I find myself dealing with that even right now. And I go back in my memory when I was married. Early in our marriage, my wife used to always ask me, you know, Craig, you know, you seem to hear from God a lot. You seem to be very assured in the voice of the Lord. You seem to be very, very confident. And when the Lord tells you to go right or to left or stay forward on this path, and, you know, how do you know? How do you know? And when do you know to turn? And I used to, my response to her was always, you know, I'm a head down type of guy. If I look up and I know the Lord's there and I know that the Lord is drawing me to him, I keep going forward. And I try to keep looking at the road to make sure that my feet are planted firmly on the road ahead and not getting off in the ditch, because the Lord showed me a vision a long time ago that if you can imagine a road in the distance, and if those of you who've driven across country would know, I mean, there's long, narrow, windy roads going across country sometime. And there's, in a lot of cases, when you get out to those barren states, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, certain parts of Texas, and those roads get from four, like the main highways in the bigger cities, down to like two, you know, two going on your side and two coming the other way. And there's not a lot of terrain and wilderness on either side of the freeway. And if you really, you know, sometimes you're coming out of the mountains of Arizona, out of the mountains into Nevada and out of, you know, these certain other areas, and you're looking down and that road will kind of dip and make some turns. And as you get back on that flat land of that road, and sometimes the road will take a high rise and you'll not actually see the next part of the road as you're coming to the next crest. And what I found that I used to do, and it used to always get me jacked up, is that when I'm making these trips, when I'm going through life, when I'm, you know, really trying to move towards missions and ministry of what the Lord had me to do, I would look down. And the truth is, let me be real transparent, it had a lot to do with dealing with people. The Lord allowed me, you know, the word for me was a lighthouse, and I'm a lighthouse. I can see the trouble coming from a far away, and I'm supposed to sound the alarm of either blessing or curse coming, you know, warfare or peace coming from afar off. So I have a tendency to even look into the good in other people that they don't even see themselves. So I used to really see the wonderfulness of what the Lord can have for a person, even though they weren't living that way. So for a lot of people, I used to give passes out a lot because it was what I saw in them. And that allowed myself to be hurt quite a bit because I wasn't paying attention to what people were showing me right then. Because the truth is, we already know people are going to tell you the truth once, and they're going to lie to you at least twice, if not more. But that saying really means that people are going to tell you who they are more so than they're going to show you who they are. Because when you really are talking to a person, you're dealing and you're watching their conduct and we're really watching their actions, you really can't act anything more than what you are for a long period of time. Because if you're acting, you are going to forget your line. You're going to forget how you are. You're going to forget the lie you told the last time you told a lie to cover the lie that you lied about. And that's where we really find ourselves. That's where I got myself jacked up with dealing with people. So we go back to the road analogy. When I used to look down the road a piece at people, or I used to look down the road a piece at ministry, in the distance, I was looking at that, let's say, a tree or a city, the object at hand, the goal. I was looking at the goal way down the road. Well, and there's a point where the goal that the Lord sets before us, the mark, the place where we're going, it's not on the road. It's a place that's set beside the road. It's a city that the road may go past or go between. It's a goal out in the distance where the goal is. It's bigger than the road. It's elevated above the road. So you're not looking down the road truly. You're just looking in the road's direction. You're looking towards where the road ends up. But if you really think about it, if you're keeping your eye, I know we used to always hear this song, you know, words and saying, you know, keep your eye on the prize, keep your eye on the prize. But here's the problem with keeping your eye on the prize. We have a tendency to stop paying attention to where the road's going. So if you're coming off those windy roads, go back to that analogy, right? Let's really tie this thing together. So you're coming down off this road. And if I was just watching the goal, if I was just watching the city lights in the distance, not paying attention to where the road may have turned to the left, or the road may turn to the right, or the road may have dipped away, or the road just may have stopped altogether. If I'm watching the goal and not paying attention to the plan, I'm going to be off in a ditch somewhere. Oh my gosh, that's good. That's good, Lord. Thank you so much. So we have to pay attention to the plan. It's, yeah, you can watch the goal, but we got to pay attention to the plan. The road is the plan. You've got to follow where that road because if you're looking into the distance, the road is going to, in some cases, the road's going to be on a high point or a low point. You're not going to actually be able to see where the road is going, and you're not going to be able to drive straight through a ditch to come out the other side and eventually get out to the goal. Well, now, some of you may say, yeah, if I got a 4x4 truck, or if I got a monster truck, or if I got something else that I can get out the ditch, yes. And that is true. I can drive my Ford Flex off into a 20-foot ravine as well. But the chances on that Flex surviving the fall from a 20-foot ravine is going to be slim and none. It may start, it may not. But if it happens to start and it's not flipped over on its head, that vehicle's not going to be much use to me until I get it repaired. So if when you find yourself keeping your eye on the prize and not paying attention to the plan, you find yourself off in a ditch somewhere. You find yourself in a place where you didn't want to be. And you ask yourself, how did I get here? In some addiction or some relationship with someone that I know I shouldn't have been with. How did I find myself married to someone that doesn't love me? How do I find myself in this affair with some man or woman that I knew I wasn't supposed to have been involved with? How did I find myself, how did I find myself here battling with thoughts of suicide? How did I find myself here becoming a drug addict or alcoholic? How did I find myself here? I used to go to church all the time. I used to read the Bible all the time. I used to talk to the Lord all the time. I used to talk to my spouse, just to keep it real, right? I used to talk to my best friend. Let's be real. I used to talk to my accountability partner. I used to talk to my pastor. I used to show up to church. I used to tithe. I used to give offerings. I used to serve. I used to be a good parent. I used to care for my kids. I used to check on my kids. I used to be present. But when you show, and that so often happens to those of us who are so busy keeping our eye on the prize, that having, even men at our age, guys, we wind up having midlife crisis because we're so busy watching what we didn't have, because that's all we wanted was to have. But we didn't pay attention to the plan as to where we're supposed to get and what we're supposed to get to. Huh. My wife and I, we wrote a marriage plan. We were encouraged to at the time we were being premarital counseled. So we made a marriage plan. The plan ran out when we had our first child together. Because the plan didn't encompass what do we do with kids. Now, it talked about how we wanted to raise our kids, yes. Because my wife, she had a son, my oldest boy, before we got married. So I needed to know, we needed to incorporate how we were going to parent, how we were going to raise Shane, and, how we were going to work through our own issues. And I had never had kids before. So it was, Sandy had a kid, she had been had Shane before we had gotten together. So For her, parenting was one thing. For me, parenting was quite another. So we had to find our goal. We had to find our common ground so the two could become one. Excuse me. Forgive me. I'm sorry. We're actually out of water at the house. And so we're going to go get that after the recording and get some water. But like I'm saying, when you don't pay attention to the plan. And I know the Bible also talks about make a plan and write it out, make it plain, so the people are confused and so they don't fall away. That's really where we are. The road is that plan. God sets us on a road and a path that's going to make some twists and turns. But there's sometimes we're so busy watching other things. We may get distracted on that highway and we may be driving towards our goal of being married, driving away from our goal of, you know, staying in our marriage. We may be driving and get distracted from that goal of staying on that job. We may get distracted from that goal of being a good parent because we may see a squirrel or a deer or something else that we call dear or want to hold dear run across the road. And some people swerve when those animals come across. Now, I'm not saying we should run over a deer. I'm not trying to tell you that because that thing will jack your car up. That's just not the way it's about. Let's just be real. But squirrels, cats, dogs, small things, rodents in the road. Some people lose their dog on mines trying to watch out for a caterpillar or an ant going across the road and get distracted. Now, some people also are watching other people who are standing on the side of the road not doing nothing. And some of us are so busy watching those on the side of the road that we don't know what we're doing. We turn our heads so far looking backwards at them as we're going down the road that we miss the turn and fall off in a ditch somewhere. So we've fallen. We've slipped up lusting after something that we can't have that's not on our path. They may be along the side of our road, but they're not in the path going the same way with us. So if someone's on the side of your plan, they're not in your plan. So that's one thing we got to really watch out for. When we find those people in our lives that are in our life for a season, when you come across a person in your path, you need to ask the Lord, hey, are they going in my direction or were they just kind of sitting on the side of the road, standing on the side of the road? Were they in a ditch that we're climbing up out of that we just kind of came across and like, oh, let me help you out. Or you know, like, you know, back in the day, you used to find these beautiful women who were actually thieves and working with, you know, some con men, used to sit on the side of the road and pretend their cars were broken down. Pretend like there's something wrong with us, that the guys would pull over. Hey, man, you know, let me try to help you out a little bit. Let me help you out. No, full well, they should never have stopped. Anyway, those guys find themselves getting beat over the head, shot, killed, and then taken for whatever they had because they were distracted. Something ran across the road. Something flashed across their plan, and they got distracted. So often we have people who are some of the greatest minds, some of the greatest athletes, some of the greatest entertainers we've ever known or ever seen at that moment. And what happens? They die young. They take their own life. They become drug addicts or addicted to everything that they could possibly find to be addicted to because they were distracted by the fame. They were distracted by what someone said about them. They're distracted in our modern era by the number of followers and fans and likes and comments. We got to not be distracted by those things. All right, we're not going to be distracted by the music. We'll be right back. Again, this is the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and we will be right back.
Hey, everyone. My name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
How do you avoid pitfalls that will disrupt your life? My office is very good with helping families protecting assets, building wealth, college flexible plans, tax-free retirement, and so much more. I am Jontrice Wells with World Financial Group, licensed to help million-dollar families, businesses, and everyone in between. You can contact me at 951-757-4202. Or email me at jw.nofamilyleftbehind@gmail.com. I'm about your family.
And welcome back to the Raise a Man Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. And we're in segment two, and we're talking about, you know, we're in our eighth week, actually, of our study, Teachable Moments. And the topic of today is, you keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. And the last time we got out of, we were just talking about how we were running off into a ditch by not paying attention to what the plan was, running off the road, finding ourselves off of the spot. And again, those analogies are based on people who find themselves in a bad way. They wind up in drug addiction. They wind up in broken marriages, broken homes, you know, suffering from even failed attempts at suicide. And in some cases, even having multiple children from multiple fathers and mothers and finding themselves in situations, bankruptcies, bad business deals, been taken advantage of by people that we thought were had our best interests at heart because we just got so caught up in the goal that we forgot to pay attention to the plan. I know some of you have been hiking or just walking around before and you've fallen. And I know, there's the old saying again, I've fallen, I can't get up. But it's true because even as the older we get, a fall is so detrimental. You can definitely break hips, break ankles, you know, tear your knees. And then what are you going to do? Trying to find your way out of that situation. You're going to wind up with a whole lot of bumps and bruises and trying to figure out how to get out from where you found yourself at the bottom. And people say, yeah, you know, you're not going to really change till you hit rock bottom. And that's part of the analogy too that we're doing, because once we find ourselves off the side of the road and sliding down that hill and that we weren't paying attention to, and sometimes it's dark in there, so we don't know the trees and the bushes that were falling against those other people's lives that weren't doing us any harm, and they're hurting us on our way down. In most cases, when you fall down a ravine or you fall down off of a cliff, you really don't ever stop falling. You don't really ever stop sliding until you hit the bottom. Because you don't have a real good point of reference. You don't have a good point of leverage. And yeah, I don't really ever want to hit the bottom. That's got a bad connotation to it. That means that I'm really at a very, very bad place. Now, I'm not saying that you can't get up from a slippery slope and slide and you can't be successful in making out. The Lord can do anything. But just be mindful that it becomes doubly challenging when you're already on that slippery slope. And that the slippery slope analogy is a person. It's a person who's in the same analogy where I was on the plan. I was in where the Lord wanted me to be, but I got distracted by something that was off the plan. I got distracted by a pretty face, a small, tight, shapely waist, or a glass of drink or something, some blow to smoke or to snore. I got distracted by some extra money that I thought I had. I got distracted by a get rich quick scheme. I got distracted. And there was something over there that I thought was better than this long, hard path that I'd been on for a long time. The straight and narrow was just boring. It was just tired of walking that straight and narrow because, you know, there's got to be a faster way to get to that goal. I can see the goal in front of me, but this road sometimes is going to the left and it's going to the right and it's curving around and it's going up and down and around. And my math teacher used to tell me, you know, that the quickest way or the fastest way to a point between two points is a straight line. So I just want to get this get rich quick scheme. I just want to get to that goal. I want to get there. But we forget that there's no quick answer to anything. No quick answer to weight loss. I gotten down to like 225 pounds, down from 250. And I had to put in work. I had to deny myself. I had to deny myself some meals. I had to deny myself my favorite snack. What do you mean, Craig? I mean, what's that got to do with the path? If the path I was on, if my goal was to have lost weight, if my goal was to eat healthy, if my goal was to be healthy, if my goal was to be the best physical condition I could possibly be by the time I was 50, it had nothing to do with the bags of Doritos, nacho cheese Doritos that I was eating while sitting in the bed because it felt good. It had nothing to do with the carbonated drinks I was drinking along the way. It had even less to do with anything else that I was putting in my mouth to eat. had everything to do with the water that was good for my system, for the word of God that I was putting in my system, for the walks and the times going to the gym, when I was actually losing the weight and I was becoming stronger and leaner and meaner, and not meaner as in terms of, you know, evil to people mean, but you know, it's the saying, I'm lean, mean, fighting machine. I was able to stay on plan. I was able to focus because I was putting in the work. I was not going the short way through. I was taking the long way around. I need more reps. Okay, for those of you who are just not into the whole, you know, driving analogy, let's put it into movies, because I love movies. I will watch movies all the time, whether it be, I don't like commercials, so sorry. I have commercials on this show, but I don't like commercials to just take from the storyline. They just in watching a movie, they're just in the way. And I know sometimes on a commercial is just a way for, yeah, you can go take a bathroom break, but I just don't like commercials. So in watching a movie, I like the Tom Cruise movie, Die Another Day. That movie is just so profound to me because it's about a guy, Tom Cruise's character. He wanted to take the short way through life. He was actually in the military. You know, the movie was staged in a post-apocalyptic time, as they want to say. It was a futuristic time where some alien creatures had come to the earth, and they were just, you know, wreaking havoc, you know, killing people and taking over the land. And there was this, you know, all the nations in the world had come together to try to fight this one enemy. Kind of like what we should be doing as Christians. We should all be coming together to, you know, wage war, you know, and defend ourselves against the devil and move towards God's plan. But anyway, we won't bring that analogy in. We'll just stick to the fact. So Tom Cruise's character was a military officer who was really just doing some journalistic type of things and just not really into the whole war thing. He thought it was too handsome, thought it was just too all that, and he wasn't really into the whole getting his hands dirty. So the American government sent him over to Europe to be a kind of an embedded member of, you know, a European army force that was fighting these creatures. And he kind of ran his mouth off, got a little bit too full of himself, got like some of us where we really didn't think before we spoke. We really kind of took advantage of our position and our place, kind of lost who we were in the moment, and we started kind of mouthing off to our superiors. And in some cases, we talk trash to the Lord and basically say, you know, I got it, Lord. I can take care of it myself. I don't need you to do anything. And then I'm really not going to go along with your plan because I got this thing. I got my own plan together. I'm going to use my free will to create my own space, create my own reality, create my own kind of plan. So God just kind of set him on the sideline. So when Tom Cruise's character was kind of running his mouth off to this, you know, foreign, you know, leader, the guy was like, oh, okay, so you think you're all that. So he basically just stripped Tom Cruise's rank and put him right in the midst at the front line of these soldiers that were fighting these creatures. And it just so happened the first time Tom Cruise manages to get out there, he just happens to luck up on killing this one bug that allowed, or creature, alien creature, to put his blood all over him, where he was allowed to repeat the day over and over until their mother bug was killed. So the point in the movie for is that he kept reliving the same point over and over, where he was going back in time where he started, embedded himself into that army group. He mouthed off to the person, went out of the war, and he would get killed. And he would get a little farther each time. When he realized that it was just no coincidence that he wasn't able to die and not come back, he had tried to figure out everything he could to figure out a plan to get to the end. He had to try to figure out a plan to get to the end. So here's the thing. When we're working through our life with the Lord and working through God's plan, we have to die to ourselves. We have to deny ourselves. We have to do like Luke 9:23. It says very clear, and I love it, even in the Passion Translation, it says, Jesus said to his followers, if you truly desire to be my disciple, you must disown your life completely, embrace the cross as your own, and surrender to my ways. Oh, when you really think about denying yourself, when you think about giving your life over to the Lord and allowing His way to be perfect in your life, that's one of the toughest scriptures I've ever had to deal with. And I originally based my marriage vows off of this. And in Luke 9:23, it's talking about this could be a meaning that we would be willing to suffer and to die for Christ. And so in a figurative sense or in a literal sense, it just depends on what the Lord's calling for in the situation at hand. So going back to the movie analogy, that's what Tom Cruise's character had to do. So every time he died to self or died in that self position, he came back and he learned a little bit more about the plan. So he was able to skip and not die the next time and get a little farther and then get a little farther and die. Get a little farther and die, and then try to convince his other co-star that how that they work together to get to the end, to get to the goal. And that's where so many of us need to be, where we forget that we're supposed to be dying to self to learn what the Lord wants us to do. That we want to go get our own thing. We find ourselves in such a world of hurt. We find ourselves stuck in situations that oddly enough repeat themselves over and over, and the Lord kind of gives us another opportunity to look, I brought you to this point before where you found yourself, you know, at the bottom of a bottle, staring up at the ceiling, looking around like, huh, how did I wind up here with vomit all over my face? How did I wind up in another wrecked car with another speeding ticket or another situation where I find myself in a court case again for the same reason? How do I wind up in the same position again with friends taking advantage of me or find myself homeless yet again? The Lord brings us to the same things to sometimes remind us of what He's already taught us and remind us what He's already brought us through. Or sometimes He brings us to the same situation because we haven't learned the lesson we needed to learn before. So I find myself, I'm like, okay, Lord, we need to get through this because I've been through this same situation with people that I've allowed to stay in my house, you know, rent free and, you know, taking advantage. Lord, I get it now. What do you want me to learn about just dealing with people in general? They're not always as nice as they are on the outside. And spend some time and see where they are. And I know I love the scripture that no greater love than a man hath that he lay his life down for his friend. I love that scripture because it doesn't say that you're supposed to do this for just everybody. It doesn't say I'm supposed to, you know, no greater love a man hath that he lay his life down for his father, mother, sister, brother, great aunt, Lucy, the dude from across the street, the milkman, the butcher, the candlestick maker, your pastor, your teacher, your dog catcher, the Terminex man. I mean, no, it says, no greater love a man have that he lay his life down for his friend. Friend is the person that you choose. I choose you. You choose me. We're going to go down this thing together. We may not be going exactly in the same goal to get to the end what the Lord told us both to go do, but somewhere on this road, we're on it together. That's the choices that we're supposed to be making. Those are the things that we're supposed to be doing. Those are the people that we lock arm in arm with, and we go for the reason. The reason is the goal, the end, to get to the end, not just for the season, a couple of exits down and we're off. When we find ourselves having gotten off the path, gotten off of God's plan, we find ourselves coming out of bad situations, coming out of jails, coming out of rehab, coming out of, some cases, coming out of comas, coming out of hospitals, coming out of bankruptcy, coming out of unemployment. And unemployment's a case of where we were fired ourselves because we weren't able to show up on time. We stole money from the business. We weren't a good steward over what the Lord gave us, and we've got to rebuild ourselves. We got dropped out of school. We knew we weren't supposed to. Got caught cheating somewhere, and then got caught cheating in our families. And it takes a little while to get out of those situations. So now we're a little scarred. We're a little banged up. We're a whole lot farther from the goal than when we started, or where we should have been at that same amount of time. The goal is still out there. It's still to keep pushing. It's still to keep doing what the Lord told us to do. And you have to go back in your mind and say, you know, what did the Lord originally tell you? What was the initial instructions that he gave us? Oh, yeah. The Lord said to do X, Y, and Z. The Lord said start that ministry. Lord said, start that church. Lord said I would be a pastor. Lord said I would be a prophet. Lord said I would be a teacher. The Lord said. So you have to go back to one. So those who are acting and those who are doing, you know, different videos and dance steps, all roads lead back to one, to first position. You have to go back, even from a musical standpoint, you have to go back for the first measure, go back to first position. Those who are in marching bands and dance teams and things like that, everything starts back at the first position. You have to start there. Even those doing martial arts, there's a first position that you start with. You have to go back to one. No matter where you find yourself in measure 25 or position 28, you have to eventually go back to one, because you got to keep acting out the line. You got to keep running through your part. You got to keep playing the melody. You got to keep moving forward until you get to the point where you get all the way through the piece, until you're done. And then, and only then, are you done. But along the way, you've got to learn technique. You've got to learn what it is. And sometimes, you know, by the time we get to, well, a lot of us haven't been to the end of our life, so we don't know what it looked like. But there's so many of us that have these great testimonies. And for so long, I used to think I didn't have a testimony. I was that kid who didn't really do anything wrong. I listened to my parents. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I was in college. I was like probably 23, 24 when I was, you know, really began to lament and talk to or feeling bad about myself because I didn't have a testimony. I used to think God didn't care about me. And people are like, well, how do you feel that? And I said, well, I haven't done anything wrong, so I haven't done anything to have earned God's favor for. So I've never been a drug addict, I've never been an alcoholic, I've never been a lot of things to that point, so I didn't have a testimony. Because I grew up in a church denominational system where the pastors and the deacons and the mothers of the church, when they would lead prayer meeting and Bible study, they'd always open up with worship and devotion. When after we get done singing some or humming or whatever we used to call it, an old hymn of the church, and we're not really sure of the lyrics because a lot of it was made up along the way, depending on how the Spirit of the Lord moved you. But someone always said, is there a testimony anybody wanted to share? And I always heard people get up. You know, I remember at Bethel AME Church on 3085 K Street in San Diego. I remember inside the church, we used to have this old prayer room. It had three pews on each side. It may have been 6 or 8 foot long pews, wooden pews. I used to hate those things because my parents used to take me in there on Wednesday nights, and it's dark and cold in there and stuffy in the room. And it's pretty sad to have to be stoled and stuffy. Cold and stuffy is tough. And I remember sitting in there listening to these old people give their testimonies. Every single one of them, I thank the Lord for giving me life and health and strength in my bones and activity in my life. By the time they got done just doing the thank you part for this, being able to stand up and give the testimony, the testimony was, you know, Lord, deliver me from smoking. Lord, deliver me from alcohol. Lord, deliver me from a car wreck yesterday. The Lord, deliver me from some drug addiction or alcohol or abusiveness or abusive relationships and being beaten, stoned, and snorted and run over. There was always something great. I never heard anybody say, thank you, Lord, for not allowing me to have needed to have had a rock bottom experience with life. A near-death experience. Never heard anybody say, thank you, Lord, for keeping me healed, and so I didn't have had to have been in the hospital. I never heard anybody say, thank you, Lord, for not having the need for you to take everything from me, leave me destitute in the middle of the street, and not have a good home to live in. Thank you, Lord, for that. I didn't hear that. So what my mind was warped to was a sense of what a testimony, what? I thought a testimony had everything to do with what you didn't have and how far the Lord has brought you from and what you did to get yourself into trouble, and I guess you must have begged enough to get that the Lord, help the Lord get you out of it. It wasn't until I was about 22, 23 when I was talking to a good friend of mine, Rita Bryan, in college, and you know, to this day, Lord, I thank you for Rita's wisdom, because I was sharing this testimony with her, and she asked me, well, at that time, I didn't know what the testimony was. So she asked me, hey, tell me about yourself. What's your testimony? And I don't have one. She's like, what do you mean you don't have one? Now, because where I'm at in my 50s now, I get it. I can honestly say that for sure. I got a testimony, you know, wife and Lord delivered me from, you know, being a father of five, and not delivering me from, but I mean, strengthening me to and deliver me, help me through while being a father of five. I mean, I've been, you know, damn near homeless. I've been pretty close to just destitute. I get it. Those are things that I can think of. Oh, yeah. I get it. That's a testimony. Yeah. It's real, real obvious things. But back in the day when it wasn't like that, when everything was everything, when everything was cool, when I didn't have these such problems, man, I didn't think I had a testimony. So Rita was like, no, that's not even true. You should thank God, because your testimony is the fact that it didn't take all that for you to love God. It didn't take a near-death experience. It didn't take an alcoholic situation for you to trust God. It didn't take a situation where you're compromising your beliefs in God for you to love God and to follow God. It didn't take all that for you to get out the boat like Peter and walk towards God. That changed my whole life. So those of you who are listening to the Raising Men Show, again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and you have a testimony like you have a testimony like mine, where you may never have done anything really measurably. I mean, we don't. Nobody's perfect. I'm not saying I was perfect. So I don't want to give that perspective at all. Please believe me. I'm just not saying I was perfect. I'm just saying that when I was trying to measure on a scale of one to sin, I didn't think that what I had done was worth anything on the Richter scale at all. But that means that the Lord is reminding you that you're so worthy just because you chose to continue to live a life that He was excited for. He didn't have to pull you out of a ditch. He didn't have to pull you out of rehab. He didn't have to pull you out anywhere, but probably out of the church long enough for you to breathe again and get ready for the next day. All right, we're going to go to break. And again, you're listening to the Raising Men Show. We're in week 8 of our study, Teachable Moments. This is Keep Going. I'll tell you when to stop. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who you hire as your realtor matters. You need a realtor who looks out for your best interests and not their own. Marie Clark with Allison James Estates is a full-time realtor, specializing in helping first-time homebuyers in Temecula and the surrounding areas. She is also a ministry leader. Today, why don't you choose Marie Clark to buy or sell your next home? Please call 951-265-6259.
This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm also an executive producer of the independent feature film Restored Me. It's a powerful, feel-good dramedy that centers around a young man trying to restore his relationship with his young daughter and her mother after his wrongful incarceration. This film speaks to restoring your faith and pushes a bold message of positivity and motivation. The cast includes Gary Owen, Bill Duke, William Lee, Matt Gerald, Richard T. Jones, Malik Yoba, Yancey Arias, and Bo Casper Smart, just to name a few. Restored Me is available on over 100 digital markets, including iTunes, Amazon, and on demand from your local cable provider. Buy it, rent it, either way, I'm asking you to watch it. It'll bless your life.
And we're back to the Raising Men Show. Final segment. We're going to bring this thing home, Lord, so we just give it all to you and we continue to move forward. We are talking about Teachable Moments, week 8. Today's topic is keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. We've been spending a lot of time dealing with the fact of as we were walking down, you know, driving or walking down the road where the Lord has us to go, or went on trips and just using the trip analogy and just not being able to pay attention to where we're going because we're watching the goal instead of paying attention to the plan. How do we do such a thing? How do we pay attention to the plan? How do we keep our head down watching our feet go without losing? Like, you know, at the same time, we need to keep our head up watching God at the same time. Well, there's a couple of ways that really allow us to do such a thing. We've got to definitely keep our eye on the prize, because even though we're on the road moving forward towards the goal, sometimes the road will take us out of the way. And even when we're on a freeway, when you're following GPS, sometimes the GPS gets a little crazy sometimes when being able to distinguish, you know, two roads that may take a similar turn, and I'm not always sure that I'm on the right road where I was really supposed to be. Maybe I was supposed to have taken that left fork and I took the right fork, my mistake. Sometimes maybe even I got stuck in traffic and I couldn't get over to where I was going. And sometimes we're just really not sure where we are. Well, we really have to pay attention to where the Lord needs us to be. So we need to continue to look up every now and again and find out where we are in relation to where the goal is. Are we moving towards the goal? Or are we moving away from the goal? But sometimes, I mean, and again, you have to make sure you're paying attention. We pay attention to what the Lord is doing and saying to us and through us, because there's moments when the Lord has us take a detour that may be going around some traffic, maybe going around an obstruction. There may be a bridge out ahead. There may be a reason the Lord's got to take us a long way around to get to something, because in some cases, we just may not be ready. I know for me in my life right now, I'm more ready for things that are coming my way than I would have been and was probably even 7 years ago. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, 7 years ago, that's when, you know, his wife was alive. Yeah, I get it. I said it for that reason on purpose, because back in those times, I wasn't near the confident person that I am now. And I have issues and I've struggled with my confidence. I've struggled with what the Lord wants from me and how the Lord wants me to be in other people's lives. I was that guy that would always say yes. If someone asked for help, yeah, I'd help you, no problem. If they wanted someone to, you know, do an odd job, yeah, I'll do it. I got you. I'll take that, because I really thought I needed that extra money. Well, it took me a long time to really understand that all money ain't good money. And even the money you have is good, yes, but it's good for the purpose the Lord sets it to be good for. So we have to be very cognizant, very mindful. We have to be very wise as a serpent, as the word does say, but gentle as doves. That so often people try to take your kindness for weakness. And sometimes we even take our own kindness and think it should be weakness, because we want to say that we want to have this false humility that, you know, that the Lord really believes that we should be one way. And I know one of my favorite scriptures of when Jesus was a cold piece, man. When he went to the temple and those dudes were, I mean, not just guys, but people were selling, and there was money changers in the temple is what it was. I mean, people were selling things in the temple courtyards and selling things in the temple. And Jesus was upset. He's like, hey, that's not the way things are supposed to go down. We're not going down like that, because that's not the way things should be. And he starts turning over tables and causing a ruckus. And, you know, we don't really, you know, often hear about that side of Jesus. You know, we hear about he never said a mumbling word when he took the lashes with the cat of nine tails. I love me some Jesus. And I'm not saying that I'll be to do something different, because someone hit me with a cat of nine tail. I think I just had this conversation with a friend of mine just a few days ago. Someone come close to hitting me one good time with one of those things. Dude, I'll tell you, what do you want my name to be? I'll tell you anything you need. But to have taken that thing, the word says 40 times, and he didn't say a word. Okay. For me, I wouldn't have had no words to put together. I'd have been jacked up just from the sheer pain. I'm sure I'd have passed out, but the words didn't say that. He took it. He stood there. He took it. There's so much that we don't do, that we just don't follow the Lord's example. Jesus just took everything that we need. He took the pain that other people said these nasty things about. And this part is really helping me, because I need to continue to go forward in my ministry. I need to continue to go forward to where the Lord wants me to go, to the goal of being a good father. But I have to go on the plan and pay attention to the plan that he set before me. My road that's ahead of me is not like the road for anybody that's over somebody else. In fact, you could have some people that are walking alongside you. Their road's different. And even their perspective of where their road is going is different, because some of our bestest friends are not going to end up in the same goal other than heaven. Yes, but the goal could be different. Your how do you say? Your experience that you need for your secret place, the experience you need for your promised land is different than your neighbors, different than your best friends. And that's okay. The steps you take on your road, your path, the plan that you're taking for yourself is different than your neighbors. And they could be locked arm in arm, but your roads are different. They may be on the same direction, yes, towards heaven, yes, but for this season, they'll walk alongside you close. And then there'll be a season where some of our bestest friends will be way, way away, because their goal is another place from you. It may be off to your right or maybe off to your left. It's not going to be behind you because you're all moving towards God. So it's never going to be behind you. And sometimes our friends are going to be going faster than us because of acceleration, because they were more ready than we were. In some cases, we've allowed ourselves to get distracted. In some cases, we just needed to lay down a minute, because that pothole that was in front of us, whether we saw it or not, it took our breath away. It caused us to slow down. Sometimes we just got tired and we just didn't hear the Lord to say, you know what, Lord, I need to know, am I still going the right way? Lord, are you still out there? And like the title of this week's lesson and study is all about is the Lord's trying to tell you, look, you need to keep doing the same thing I told you. What was the last instruction I gave you? And using a military term, what was the last good copy that you got from me? Oh, well, you told me, Lord, to do this. Okay. Did I tell you to stop? Well, no. Okay. So speaking for me, if the Lord told me to do the Raising Men show, did I have to do the Raising Men show? He didn't tell me to stop doing the Raising Men show. He told me to do the Raising Men show. He told me to do Raising Men. He didn't tell me to stop doing Raising Men. He told me to continue to raise my men. He told me that Raising Men was not going to be this global phenomenon, but it was going to be this opportunity for people to be able to stay close to who I am and be able to sit and get to know who I was as a man, not anything else to do with anything else other than that. It wasn't going to be a large platform. It was going to be something that you can actually say, hey, I know that guy. Hey, I can go talk to the guy. You know, we just had Bible study together. I did one of his studies. I went to a men's conference where he may have been a speaker. I bought the book that he had on it. He actually signed it. He actually taught from it. He came to our church. We went to his house and we had Bible study. We went to his kids' graduation. There'll be a point when I'll be able to do more. But for right now, if I was all across the world right now, who would raise my men? This isn't someone else raising my men. That's not the name of the platform. I don't even know how to put that on a license plate. I said that would be S-O-R-M. RZNGMEN, someone else raising my men? I mean, that's not what this is. This is raising men. This is about what my wife and I were called to do. She got called on to glory, so she did what she was supposed to do, which was to deliver them and walk alongside together with me until that she got to the point where her time was ended. Lord called her away. So now I'm sitting here raising these men, and I got to make sure that they get to the end where they're supposed to go until my time runs out. So I don't have time to dilly-dally and mess around and get distracted from one place to another or one person to another and just watch the goal and don't pay attention to the plan. You had to watch the goal, yes, but you also got to pay attention to the plan. So it's watch the goal, pay attention to the plan. Watch the goal, pay attention to the plan. So meaning I got to watch the goal. Where's the goal? Am I moving towards it? Is it still in front of me? Yes, but I got to look down at my feet, paying attention to the plan. Where that road is going to, I got to make sure I'm going step by step, making sure that I'm listening. Lord, did you tell me to keep going this way? Did you tell me to still keep staying on this path? Is it still this plan? No matter what it hurts, Lord God, I don't know what to do because I'm running out of money. I don't know what to do. Money's getting low. I don't know what to do. My sickness, my health is getting faint. I'm getting tired. Lord, I don't know what to do. I don't know how I'm going to pay for this. Lord, I don't know what to do. The kids need something. The kids need shoes. And the Lord would tell you, come on, keep coming. He's in front of you telling you, keep coming. I'll tell you when it's tough. Keep coming. Keep coming. Yep. Come on. Come on. I bid you come. Yes. If it needs to be coming out of that boat, then yes, come, 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 come. You need to keep coming. I didn't tell you to stop moving. I told you to come. Come to me. Come to me. Come, come, come. Like you can try to get that baby learning to walk. It's walking every... No, no, no. Come here. Come here. Come walk to me. Yes, keep coming. I'll tell you when to stop. Nope. Am I good? Am I there yet? No, you're not there yet. Let's go. We have to keep going. We can't get where I'm so tired. Yeah, I record these shows on Monday nights after 11 o'clock. I have to be up and ready for, now get kids up for school and get ready for work about 6. Lord, I'm so tired. I don't think anybody really cares what I have to say. Lord, does it really matter? Does it really matter at this point? I need to die to self. Luke 9:23, Jesus said to his followers, and if you truly desire to be my disciples, you must disown your life completely. That's a key word right there. They didn't just say disown a part of your life, just own a segment of your life, just disown one part of your life. It says you must disown your life completely. It's everything. My selfish desires, my tiredness, and embrace my cross as your own, and surrender to my ways. So keep coming. If there's something that you know the Lord has told you to do, keep going. Keep coming. Yeah, he's calling you. Keep coming. If you were supposed to go back to school to get that degree, keep coming. If you were supposed to just, I don't know, start a business, keep coming. If you were supposed to get up and write that book, keep coming. I don't care if you've been writing it for 20 or 30 years, you got to keep coming. Because maybe the book required you to do some more living. Maybe the book required you to live out some things so you can share an example. Maybe the book needed to wait for the publisher to be created first for you to be able to have your book come forth. Maybe you had to do something along the way and live long enough to go through an experience that so when someone else needed you, you crossed that path of the perfect moment that was perfect for them, which you already ordained because that was a part of your plan. But you got to keep coming so you know what the goal is, and you got to keep watching the paying attention to the plan and watch that road so that you don't fall into that ditch and you fall away. Because if you fall in that ditch, that means the Lord's got to send someone else in that plan to come down in the ditch to help you. That means that they're now off book because they're down in there trying to help you get out of your rehab, out of your drug addiction, out of your womanizing, out of your whatever the situation that you found yourself in when you should have already been on the road, because you shouldn't have been down in the first doggone place. Because as we already know, every road has some form of marker, whether it's those little reflectors on the road to remind you, nope, you're too close to the edge, stay off the edge. You got the lines on the middle and the lines on the edge. Nope, you can see it reflecting in the dark. Nope, stay over here, stay in the middle. Stay in the middle. You don't need to get off on that slippery slope, because yeah, that slippery slope is because you're off book. You're off on the side of the road. Get back in the middle of the road where you belong. Pay attention. Keep your eyes on the goal and pay attention to the plan. I'm saying over and over, keep your eye on the goal. Pay attention to the plan. Keep your eye on the goal and pay attention to the plan. You are listening to The Raising Men Show right here on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. I didn't start off the show this time by saying, what up, Chatham? How you all doing? And those of you who are following us, listening us to our archives at theraisingmenshow.com. And that's theraisingmen.com. Man, we are here Tuesdays right here. I love it. I love it. Lord, I just thank you for what you're doing in our lives and the lives of this ministry, God, and this opportunity that you've given to just share your word. Week 8 of Teachable Moments. Keep going. I'll tell you when to stop.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
How do you avoid pitfalls that will disrupt your life? My office is very good with helping families protecting assets, building wealth, college flexible plans, tax-free retirement, and so much more. I am Jontrice Wells with World Financial Group, licensed to help million-dollar families, businesses, and everyone in between. You can contact me at 951-757-4202 or email me at jw.nofamilyleftbehind@gmail.com. I'm about your family.